From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 1 year ago, December 2014, at the Success Academy Charter School in Brooklyn. The New York Times tells the story of a six-year-old girl named Falaki Ogunduran. She had earned multiple demerits for not following the school's directions, keeping her hands folded in her lap or in front of her, for example. When she would get a demerit, sometimes she would complain or have an outburst, and that would earn her more. So last December, the school's principal called the girl's mother and explained that if the girl continued to be defiant, he would call 911. And that day, her mother pulled Falaki out of that school. So what's the story? Well, the New York Times reports that this is one of the highest performing charter schools in New York, and it turns out that administrators had created a so-called got-to-go list of students. Parents allege that the school is performing at a high level because administrators have figured out how to weed out students, like Falaki, students who are struggling. They can't just expel a student like that, but by cajoling the parents or scheduling near-constant meetings, parents might get exhausted and give up and put their kids in a different school. Success Academy responded to the Times story by saying that mistakes were made. They shouldn't have had that kind of a list, but that they would never intentionally stack the academic deck, so to speak. The students are chosen by lottery there, and administrators say that sometimes students do fit better in other schools. Well, after that Times story, I heard from several listeners, parents who wanted to know, is this commonplace? Do Rochester charter schools have got-to-go lists of students? Is that fair? How is it done? We reached out to local charters, and this is our chance to talk about that. About discipline, about how they seek to raise standards for all of the students. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things with them this hour. So let me go ahead and welcome my guests. Back on the program is Donna Marie Cosine, who is the Chief Educational Officer of the Renaissance Academy Charter School of the Arts. And Donna Marie, thanks for being back here.
Thanks. It's great being back.
I have Toya Wilson here, a principal at Young Women's College Prep Charter School. And Toya, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And a parent is here as well. Maria Dalmau is here, and Maria is a plaintiff also in the Brown versus New York funding lawsuit. We'll be talking about that. She's the parent of two charter school students in fourth grade and first grade. Is that right?
That is correct.
How are they doing?
They're doing awesome.
Well, we have a lot to talk about with you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
I just want to make sure we start by going around the table and letting our audience know exactly where you are and what it is you do. Toya Wilson, the principal of the Young Women's College Prep Charter School. Where are you? How big are you? How long have you been there?
We're located on Flower City Park, right in the heart of Rochester. This is my first year with the school. I've served many years as principals in other places. And the school is in its fourth year of existence. We're a college prep program. And part of the thinking behind our program is to really help every student who wants that chance to go on and be successful in college really have everything they need to be successful. So I think about myself, I think about other staff members, and we think about all the challenges we had, and we want to help our students avoid some of the pitfalls we had and help them with all things college so that they're ready for that transition.
And again, the grades and how many total students?
We are right now we're 7th through 10th grade. Mm-hmm. We will continue to grow until we have 12th grade.
Yep.
And we're just under 300 students right now.
Okay, just under 300 students. Donna Marie Cosine from Renaissance Academy Charter School of the Arts, the size and scope of the school?
We are currently just below 249 students, about 245. We have kindergarten through third grade. We are located on 299 Kirk Road in Greece. We have a beautiful facility on 15 acres that our board was recently able to purchase.
Okay, and been around for how long?
This is our second academic year.
Okay, so what changes are coming in terms of size? What changes will be coming?
Each year we add three kindergarten classes until we're full grown to K-6. So when we are at our full grow out, we'll be just under 500 students.
Okay, so about halfway there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And how are things going there?
Great.
Growing as expected?
Growing as expected. We have a very healthy wait list, and children are having a wonderful time and learning a lot.
All right. Maria Dalmau, your children in fourth and first grade, they go where? To what school?
Eugenio Maria de Hostos Charter School.
Okay. And how long have they been in school there?
Samantha has been there since kindergarten. She's in fourth grade right now. And Mariana is in second grade. She was also admitted in kindergarten.
Okay. So let me ask our panel first what you thought of the New York Times story. And then we'll talk about, I think, a lot of the common questions. How do you determine your student body? You know, how do you discipline, et cetera, et cetera? So as a parent, Maria Dalmau, when you read the New York Times story and the allegations at Success down in Brooklyn, not here, down in Brooklyn, what did you think?
I actually got an email from your producer last night and decided to Google it because I didn't hear about it. And I was totally outraged. is that it's run at many levels. This is absolutely, to me, discrimination. This is not how charter schools work. This is not how charter schools operate. But the simple fact of having a got-to-go list is absolutely discriminating.
Never heard of anything like that.
Never heard anything like that as a parent in the charter school.
Okay. Toya Wilson, what did you think of that story?
I agree with Maria. I was very surprised to hear that. You know, we are still a public school, and so we receive students from all over Rochester. They come in at all levels. We do have a significant portion of our seventh grade class that comes in behind, and we do what we need to do to help them get caught up so that they can still make that transition. So we're trying to work with every student.
Have you ever created any kind of a list talking about students who are in trouble?
No, I was very surprised to hear that there was a school that had done so.
Okay. And Donna Marie Cosine, what did you think?
I thought it was sad because it gives all charter schools a black eye, so to speak, because people think that we're all painted with the same brush, or they paint us with the same brush, that because one school does that we all do that. And actually, there are state laws to protect children from things like that. So it was surprising to me that is a reality happening elsewhere.
Okay, and to be clear here, you know, the Times story, the allegation was that I think that the school had this list, 16 students, and they thought, well, if we can make it difficult for the parents, schedule all these meetings, do all these things that would sort of exhaust them, maybe they'll send their kids elsewhere. And 9 of the 16 parents did. But, you know, some people have said, well, I still read that and I didn't see anything illegal. Did you see something maybe illegal or at least problematic in terms of the law, Donna Marie?
When I was thinking about illegality of it, in particular, in that case, there was nothing illegal about it.
Right.
I mean, as long as you're following your discipline policy. But, you know, children are protected by due process. Their rights are protected as students. There's and we have to make sure as administrators that we're following those rights of students.
Okay. And I will just ask you, doing my due diligence, no lists like that at your school, I assume?
No, we don't have lists like that at our school. Absolutely not.
Okay. Now, when it comes to the question on how charter schools are composed in terms of the student body, I think for parents who don't have kids in charter schools, and if you don't think about it often, maybe you don't know or maybe you have assumptions. So let me ask and I'll go back around the table. How are students at your school? You know, how do you create that student body?
We go out and recruit children from all over the city and in Monroe County. April 1st is the deadline for enrollment applications, and all children go into a lottery if you have more applications than you have seats. Last year we had over 300 applications for 75 seats. So they go into a lottery, and then your first 75 are the ones who are offered admission. However, in New York State, and I believe this is also federal, there is preference for students of siblings and also district of location. You can also have preference if it's in your charter if you have a special program. For instance, if you have a special program for English language learners, you can give preference to them before the general population, or if you have a preference for at-risk students who are at risk, considered at risk for failure. But currently our charter does not have those. So we admit siblings first, then district of residence, which for us is Greece, and then the general lottery.
Okay, and you said you'll actually do some recruiting. That was a word that you used there. But what does that exactly mean? I mean, are you actually going after individual students, or are you simply just trying to create more awareness and more of an opportunity for all parents?
The latter.
Okay.
So we have a family services coordinator, and he goes to many of the Head Start and UPK programs and goes and shares information about us and sits with them. And if they want to fill an application, he helps them do that. We also accept applications through our website or by mail or fax or anything like that. And in New York State, you cannot require anyone to do anything above and beyond the application.
Okay.
So we don't require anything else.
And so for anybody who hears you say, well, you do some recruiting, that doesn't mean headhunting individual students, high-performing students.
No, especially, I mean, we're a kindergarten to, eventually
of course.
Six.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, no, we just go to a lot of the early childhood centers.
Okay. And 300 applicants, 75 spots, and It's a lottery system.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pure lottery system. Okay. So, Toya Wilson, what's the process for your school?
It's very similar to mm-hmm. Renaissance. We also do recruit. We work with all the schools across Rochester who have sixth graders, sixth grade girls, who would be transitioning off to seventh grade. And then we even added this year an opportunity to bring in anybody who could be transitioning to ninth grade, because those are two exit years for different schools. And so we've opened it up to take in as many students as possible. We currently have 75 seats at each grade level, although we're looking at shifting at an increase in the number at seventh grade so that we can bring in more students. And the school is in a bit of a transition. As I said, I started with the school this year. And so last year, there was not a lottery. Everybody who applied was accepted, and that's everyone. So it's reaching out to everyone and anyone. We go out to big events, like, for example, we were just at the Step Jam, where families of all ranges and all types of families were there, and we recruited and gave out applications and even accepted some applications. So it's reaching out to every family who wants our type of school as an option.
Okay, and if you've got a class of 75 or one that could grow beyond 75 a bit, and in recent years, you're taking everybody who applies.
Last year.
If you end up with 150, 300, or 500 applicants, then you're going to be in a lottery system?
Then we go to the lottery system. And last year was the only year that we did not do a lottery. And so this year we're already collecting applications similar to Renaissance. They can apply right through our website. There's an application there. We have several open house events all up on our website, so anybody can go there and see when they want to come and check out our school, meet our teachers, see some of the clubs that the kids are working on, and we're accepting applications there too. So we just continue to accept applications. We hit that date around April 1st, and then we do the lottery.
Is a pure lottery? Is there anything that would put students ahead of any others in
the same rules apply. The sibling preference applies, and then the district of location.
Nothing with grades or anything else like that, though?
No.
Okay. And before I go over to our parent on the panel, talk about her kids who are in school. You know, I think the New York Times story, I think like Donna Marie was saying, it probably does for people who see that headline. They may make some generalizations about charter schools. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to have this conversation today. Not to do PR for the charter school system, but to ask blunt and direct questions about how it works and maybe where people are getting some things wrong. What do you think the lesson is, and what would you want people who pick up the New York Times and read that story, what would you want them to know? I mean, does that remind you about perception and reality? I mean, what do you think?
Exactly. I think anyone who reads that story has to keep in mind that it's one school, and there's multiple pieces to that story. There's different levels. The administrators told a different side. It's not what's happening in Rochester. Even to this day, if we have seats available, we've had families coming in the middle of the school year, and they want to come to our school. And all we look at is, can we write you a schedule? If we can write you a schedule, we will take you. Doesn't matter what your grades are, as long as we can accommodate you and make sure you can get what you need to graduate and be successful off in college. So I think if they really want to know what's going on in the charter schools, come out to our charter schools. We have all kinds of opportunities to bring in families to see what's going on. And when we have those events, we try to invite our current parents and some students. So you could ask questions, and they'd give you honest answers. Our girls are very vocal in a positive way.
Now, let me ask Maria Delmau, who's got kids in fourth and first grade, and that's been the case since their kindergarten years. So your first child... in the kindergarten year, you simply were one chosen in a lottery. Is that right?
Yes, actually, I received as a pre-K parent, I received information from the city school district that gives me the opportunity to compare different schools around the district. And I just look at my daughter's personality, my daughter's ability to learn everything, and scores of the school, and I decided that Eugenio Maria de Hostos was the perfect school for my daughter. So I just filled out the application and prayed. That's all I did. And praise God, she got in. And because she's in, my little one got in because she's a sibling. Siblings get automatically in the school.
You remember finding out that she got in? What was that like?
The first thing that I said was praise God, because I really prayed for my daughter to be in Eugenio Maria de Hostos. Just looking in papers, at that point, I didn't even spoke to anybody. I haven't even visited the school. After she got accepted in the school, I walk in the school, and I'm in the first floor, and you can hear was happening. You know, like there's nothing going on. Everybody's in their classroom. Everybody's learning. You look at every classroom and you see every child engaged, every teacher personalizing the learning of every single child. So I know that I pray for the right thing and I made the right decision.
And so here's Jerry just writing and saying, Evan, I guess I don't know a lot about charter schools. I picture everyone in a uniform and everyone like they were described in that Time story, hands folded on your desk, and if not, you're in trouble. Well, does everybody have uniforms?
Actually, I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I absolutely love uniform. In some countries, you don't use regular clothes. You use uniform. Uniform give you an identity, gave you a sense of belonging. Uniform, at least in my country, if you see a child in a wrong place, you can tell by the uniform where that child belongs to. And you can call, you know, the authorities and say such and such child from such and such school is in the wrong place at the wrong time. So uniform give you that sense of belonging, that sense of identity. The discipline, you have to come to the classroom. You have to see the love that these teachers have for each child individually. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen in a public school, but I'm saying that the children are comfortable with this. This is all they know. The kids, most of the kids that go to charter school, they get in the school in kindergarten. So this is their routine. This is their daily routine. They know what's expected, and they just do it. And if you look at it, it creates and develops their personality, their character, and that's what the teachers are doing. This is what charter schools do.
Structure. Discipline.
Discipline.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. And how do your girls feel about the uniforms?
Oh, they love it.
Come on.
My daughters absolutely love uniform.
Okay, so yes. So uniforms, are uniforms?
Yes, we have uniforms. We have a range of uniform pieces that girls can select to wear. We think about what is it like to be a teenage girl and what kinds of things they would like to have added to their uniforms, and so we add different pieces. We actually just added another layer to the uniform. The girls can wear any college shirt on a Friday with their khakis. So, yes, we do have a uniform, and we try to bring in the variety, but I agree with Maria. Having worked in a uniform school for many years now, the students, when they get to their senior year, you think they want to say something bad about the uniform, and the first thing they say is, it's what brings us together. It brings us together for one mission. Like, we're all here to get ready to go off to college, and we all have that same goal, and the uniform brings us together for that goal.
Okay. Uniforms, Donna Marie?
We are, and we I think uniforms also give us a feeling of purpose, you know, seriousness of purpose. Why are we here? Well, we're all students, and we can be proud of that. We do give all of our families 3 free uniform shirts when they enroll, so that for families who can't afford them, at least they can get started with 3 shirts.
We've got a lot to talk about this hour, and I see the phone starting to ring. If you want to weigh in with comments or questions on charter schools, you can find us on Twitter at Evan Dawson. You can call the program 844-295-TALK, toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And we had some, you know, just basic questions on discipline as well. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about suspensions and how our schools handle that. And I'll start with Toya Wilson, who's the principal of Young Women's College Prep Charter School. Toya, in the New York Times story, it was almost like a Rorschach test. You know, some people read that and said, good, that's what it should be like. It is strict, hands folded in front of you. If you can't behave, you're going to be taken out and suspended, and that's how it should be. You've got to impose structure. Others say that when you over-suspend, it is to the detriment. You create a culture where a child is used to not coming to school, bad things happen, bad outcomes, etc. What's your view on suspensions, and how frequently are you suspending?
Well, the goal is always to reduce suspensions. I always say that the student who's tied up in suspensions, you really have to do something more beyond that suspension, because you want them to grow. And that time does not change the behavior. So what we focused on this year, and we've hit it very hard, is we are a positive behavior interventions and support school, PBIS. And it's all about showing your pride. So what we have done as a school is we've come together and we defined what are the expectations in every place of the building. What is it like to enter the school? What should we expect in a classroom? What should we expect in a hallway, cafeteria, and so on? And if you are exhibiting these behaviors, you are showing your pride. You are being prepared, respectful, you're independent, you're dedicated, and you're working towards excellence. Those are the letters of pride. And as the students are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, they are acknowledged through a system that we have, and then they can earn things because they are being acknowledged for doing the right thing. So it's more of a positive approach first. Now, the flip side of that is we have to address some of the things that come up where we have to give redirection to students. We are also a restorative justice school, which means we come together to really look at what is the root of this problem, where is it coming from? And instead of the adults coming up with the solution, we bring the kids into it and let them have a voice. When you're working with all girls, the goal is to really help them build that self-confidence and help them have that voice in a positive way. And so when we try to resolve solutions or situations that girls are having, is more about, well, what do you need to move beyond this? I can't tell you what that is. You know, you have to explain what you need to move forward. And a lot of times we have no clue, and what they come up with are really great solutions. We have students who are trained to be peer mediators to do some of this work. We have adults who are trained to do this work. And so we really try to get to the source and come up with a personal contract for each student and then help them live up to that. So it's all about helping them move beyond.
Is your rate of suspension lower than a lot of public, regular public schools?
We are, because we have a combination of things that we can do with students as far as consequences. It's progressive discipline. So, you know, we have things that we can put in place like detentions and things like that that we offer school-wide. And so we're able to put some of those things in place before we get to the suspension, because the suspension is not always the answer. It's really about helping the student understand what are the expected behaviors going forward.
It feels like in many cases, in many places, you know, whether it's Sean Nelms from East and the new partnership there, or, you know, other districts and other programs we've talked about, it seems like there's more of an emphasis on restorative justice and these kinds of models where we don't just suspend, particularly for nonviolent offenses. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if a student is obstreperous, you want to be able to get them in line. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it seems like lately we're just hearing just suspending is kind of an old model, and it hasn't worked. Do you agree?
Suspensions don't work. The student who may have seen the incident and may have seen the student be suspended might get something out of that. But the student who's being suspended, not only are they getting further behind, they are really not reflecting on what do they need to do to go forward. And so I think there's been a major shift in many schools to really focus in on what are we doing with this child if they do have to be suspended, like you said, for something that goes beyond the nonviolent situation. How do we help them come back and get acquainted back in school and be successful?
Okay. Donna Marie, what about discipline at your school?
I want to build off of what Toya said about progressive discipline. We use a progressive discipline approach also at Renaissance Academy. And basically it's that you go through many, many steps to try and remediate behaviors until you would actually get to or eventually get to a suspension. Our suspension rate this year is much lower than it actually was last year. Last year we brought 194 children together from many different schools, and trying to create that school culture is very, very difficult. But we do the very best we can to use progressive discipline. One of the things that we're doing this year, the Dean of Students and I and my Chief of Operations, we're all working on creating for next year an alternative to suspension program. Some of the charter schools that have been around longer have those already in place, where you have something in your building that you can do with children other than send them home. Unfortunately, when you're a new school like we were and still are, and because of the funding inequity in that we get 60% of what the district gets to educate their children, plus anything we have to pay for rent or anything like that comes out of our per pupil funding, we really are working with a skeletal staff. So we don't have a lot of those programs in the beginning, but that is something that we're committed to reducing the number of students who might have to leave school because of behavior, and try to create something within the building to address those needs.
Go ahead, Toya.
As Donna Marie mentioned, the alternative to suspension, that's one of our steps in progressive discipline. And we have a behavioral specialist who works in that location. And the whole system in that location is designed around, is really focused on looking at a reflection piece so that we can get you to reflect and think about how do you go forward so that we can get you back to class as quickly as possible. And so there's many levels that there's a couple steps that could happen right there in that room, and so that we can make sure we get the kids back to school, back to their classes as quickly as possible.
I want to pick up a phone call because waiting on the phone has been Rachel in East Irondequoit. So go ahead, Rachel.
Hi. I'm just wondering if anyone on the panel is a little off topic, but I live in East Irondequoit and not, you know, necessarily thrilled with the way that the public school is teaching my children. I'm wondering if they have any idea if an option is ever going to be available to me for a charter school, because I can't afford private. And I feel when you live in the suburbs, you kind of get looked over because you live in the suburbs. So I'm wondering if there's any opportunity for my kids ever to be even accepted into a charter school.
Thanks for the phone call, Rachel. Donna Marie?
Yeah, we have children from the Irondequoits, actually. As long as you live within 15 miles of the school, busing is free. But you would just have to do, just like everyone else, is put your application in and go through the process. If there are seats, then the seats would be open. There are times, like for instance now at our school, we have a long wait list at kindergarten, but we don't have a wait list at some of the higher grades. And if a seat opens, if there's an application waiting, we could accept that student regardless of where they come from. So
do you accept city children first?
Renaissance Academy Charter School of the Arts does not, because we're not located in the city of Rochester. We're located in Greece, so we accept Greece applications first. We don't get as many Greece applications as we get, obviously, from the city of Rochester. But as I said, we have students from 6 suburban school districts in our building.
Okay, so basically, if you live in a suburb, you need a charter school in your suburb.
No, you do not.
Or near your suburb.
You do not.
Can you go to a city school?
Yes.
A city charter school if you live in the suburbs? Can you get picked?
Yes, you can. I'll let Toya speak to that.
Yeah, I actually have a student who comes from East Irondequoit. She's the only one on her bus. We have several buses that come in from the surrounding districts, and it's the same as Renaissance. You have to just be within 15 miles, and the district you live in is responsible for busing you. So
they would have the same chances as a child in the city.
Our preference is Rochester first because that's where we're located. But if we don't max out on our seats, then we have seats available. And last year we did not do a lottery because we did not max out on our seats. So there might be a spot or two in different places, depending on the grade level.
Now, do you see any charter schools coming to East Irondequoit? Have you heard of anything
over in
that area? Or
no, I haven't either. The issue that we have as charter schools are facilities. And charter schools that were chartered after 2010, which are Toya School and my school, mm-hmm. we are held to a very high standard for what a facility needs to look like, which is why our school is on off of Ladder Road in Greece. We found a facility that met all of the state guidelines for facilities. So oftentimes it's where the facility is where the charter school winds up, because facilities are so difficult for us to get.
Okay, great. All right, so I guess I just need to look more into this then, because I thought it was, if you lived in the suburbs, you didn't really get into them. So I'm glad that I asked that question. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Rachel. Welcome,
Rachel. Thanks for the phone call. Do you see how many ideas that people have or just maybe missed
yes.
assumptions about charter schools? And again,
right.
you know, we have a listener on Twitter who said, you only have pro-charter people on your panel today. This is not an hour debating whether charters are the right or wrong decision for either your child or for our community. This is a response to a New York Times story that got a lot of traction down in Brooklyn that had a lot of parents upset, that made parents wondering, is this how charter schools behave? Do they have a got-to-go list? Do they take out students in some way? Do they get them out of the school if they're not performing the way they want in order to sort of stack the deck academically, score-wise, etc.? And so we wanted to ask those direct questions and then follow up with how do you approach discipline? What is your approach and why at your school? It's not the same at every school. And these are the folks who responded to what I think is probably not immediately the most comfortable conversation when we call a charter school and say, hey, did you see that story in the Times?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are talking about it. But they said, sure, let's talk about it. So let's get a short break in. We'll get more of your phone calls in, more of your questions as well with our panel. Toya Wilson's here, the principal of Young Women's College Prep Charter School, and Donna Marie Cozine, the chief educational officer of Renaissance Academy Charter School of the Arts. Maria Dalmau is here, and she is a parent of 2 charter school students. More of this conversation next. Coming up in our second hour, a college professor at Wheaton outside Chicago was suspended because she said that Christians and Muslims pray to the same God. College administrators say that's not exactly true. She's now suspended through the spring, and many religious leaders are standing with her. We'll talk about religious differences, how to understand the differences, and how it can even bring us together. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before I get back to your phone calls, another of our listeners on Twitter says, is it a coincidence that before state testing, there's an exodus of kids from charter schools into the Rochester City School District occurring? And how about you publish the data? So there's one of our listeners online here. Toya, I'll start with you. Go ahead.
Our numbers stay consistent throughout the year. We actually
there's not an exodus right before testing.
No.
Okay.
We actually are continuing to take students this year throughout the year, so our numbers go up. They're continuing to go up. And as far as testing is concerned, we do a lot of work to really help all of our students be exposed to everything they can, so they can be successful. So it's about building their confidence. So our students feel good about being there at testing. They don't want to leave us.
Donna Marie Cosa?
Yeah, same thing. We're still accepting students now. We just enrolled a family yesterday that's going to start in January, and that's 3 months before the testing. So it's not happening at my school. Obviously, it's not happening at Toya's school. We can't speak to other schools.
And I actually don't agree with the departure of people. Is that charter school is a space situation. We don't have funding for facilities, so we can only have certain amount of children. So it's not that the kids are leaving, it's that we don't have the space to take as many families as they would love to take.
Okay. Well, and I'm going to get back to your phones in just a second, but there's a couple of emails on a similar theme. So let me try to sum them up, and I'll ask our panel to respond to it. And it basically boils down to something that sounds kind of like this. You have a lottery system. The only preference you get is if you've had a sibling, but that's pretty much it, right? You don't have a preference for students with better grades, better performance records, better athletic performance, whatever. It's a lottery system. So the idea is everybody's got a chance to get your kid into a charter school if you want them. Some of the emails coming in say that is an absolutely noble idea, but the people who are aware enough and actually active enough to even apply already have a head start for their kids. And I'm looking at a wonderful parent here. Well, Marie, I just met you. I'm making a judgment about you because you are this outgoing, smiling person who speaks about your children in ways that we all would want parents to talk about kids. And we know that's not the case for every child and every family. Unfortunately, that's just not true everywhere. So is there an inherent advantage that if you're the type to even apply to be in a lottery, is that a population of kids who are already advantaged in some way? And if we're taking more of those kids out of the general RCSD population, does that leave RCSD even more disadvantaged? I'll start with the parent. What do you think, Maria?
So when it comes to the admission process, it is, at least in Eugenio Maria de Hostos, it's a blind lottery. Now picture if you play the lottery and you knew what number to play, you will play it all the time. Well, you just play it and you just wait for luck. So that's the way it is at charter school. You just fill out the application, submit the application, just wait for the lottery, and just hope and pray that your child.
Sure, not everybody wins.
No, not everybody
wins. But all the kids, let's say there's 75 slots and 300 applications.
Yes.
The idea is all 300, or at least most of those 300, are from parents who are at least diligent enough to know what's out there, to apply, to be thinking about it, and you're already with a leg up.
That's the only thing you have to do as a parent. Fill out that application and hand it in.
Okay. Donna Marie Cosine, how do you respond to that?
You know, I agree to what he's saying to a point, but that's why when we go out and recruit, we go to many different locations. We go during the day, we go at night, we leave information. We have the building open for people to come for tours. Really, that's it. You know, we can only reach out as much as we can, but he is accurate. I mean, some of the parents are more interested, but that's not the case for all of them. Mm-hmm. There are many parents who just said, remember last year we had a charter school fair, and these two young men had children entering kindergarten, and they heard it on WDKX, and they came down and they said, we don't really know much about your school, tell us, and they filled it out right there. So it's not always the most educated parents who come. They just want a choice for their children.
Okay. And Toya, here's another email on a similar line. I'll read this. It's from Catherine. She writes, I still have not heard anything new in this discussion to detail what makes a charter different from RCSD. In my 25 years of teaching, we too used positive behavior incentives rather than punitive. We too trained students to be peer mediators. In-school suspension rooms were instituted years ago so that students who crossed the line were kept in the building with a certified teacher rather than pushing students out. If you visited classrooms, you too would have seen active engagement rather than kids seated with hands folded. So what really is the difference? Perhaps the only thing I can think of is that parent involvement seems to be much stronger in charter schools. Comments?
Not completely true. We do have involved parents just like any other public school, but we also have some that we continue to work with. It's the whole range. I think what makes us different is we have a college prep model designed for educating the entire girl, the whole girl. And so we really look at how we want to first provide a small enough environment that we really get to know every single child and their family so that when we're working with them and something is bothering them and we know that. There's certain young ladies, if I see them at lunch, I know exactly how their day is going just by the look on their face. So a smaller environment, a longer school year, a longer school day, many of our students come in behind, but our goal is to get them caught up, but not just caught up, but ready to be successful in college. So we work longer and harder during the school year, and then we do all kinds of extra programs that support that educating the whole girl. We have an advisory program that's designed to address the social emotional aspect and also help them work on the soft skills that they would need to transition off to college. We have many programs over the summer that we offer. For example, our ninth graders went to a summer bridge program. They moved into on campus at RIT. So their parents got that experience of moving them into a dorm. They had a roommate. They had to attend classes. There were a lot of team building opportunities, but there were also classes in which they were engaged in the work early in the middle of July, going into August. And so it's really about those different opportunities we can offer girls because we're so much smaller and we have the opportunity to go beyond just the normal school day.
Okay, Don Marie.
Yeah, there are two things also I'm sure Toya will agree with me. One is when you're the leader of a charter school, you have a lot more flexibility. You can make decisions very quickly. You can make changes very quickly instead of having to go through a bureaucracy of, if the district has, and I've worked in both district schools and now public charter schools. Let's say my literacy specialist came up to me last year and said, we're having trouble with this situation. I said, well, let's sit down and brainstorm it. What are we going to do? Well, we came up with a program. Immediately, we were able to implement it the following week. When you're in a large district, things like that don't happen. You can't be as responsive because there are many layers that you need to go through to get to that. The second thing that charter schools do differently is that we grow out. We grow up. So we don't just open our doors to 500 children in K-6. We start with K-1 or K-2, and we grow up, and everyone knows what the culture is and what the expectations are. So you're building a culture with small groups of children, and then that culture goes through until you have your entire school population.
Well, okay. And when it comes to that sort of the red tape, the bureaucracy, et cetera, what comes to mind for me then is I think probably teachers, administrators in a lot of different places would love that flexibility, that sort of quick action and implementation that says, if I need to do something tomorrow or next week, I can, as opposed to, can I get it cleared? And there's 10 cooks in the kitchen, and mm-hmm. Are we okay to do this? Do I have to wait until next spring? But I'm also hearing parents or teachers who might be listening saying, then what you're talking about is an advantage that public schools don't have and isn't part of the point of a charter school to figure out how can we do things differently, maybe experiment a little bit more, try new things, but things that we can maybe those models can travel. Mm-hmm. And is what you're describing an advantage of a charter school that can't travel, or is this more of an indictment of bureaucracy in a big district that, I don't think we can't get over bureaucracy. I think some districts are more efficient than others.
I think it's more an indictment on bureaucracy anywhere. It's not about one particular district. Charter schools were started to kind of be educational petri dishes. What are you going to do there that's innovative that you can extend to other schools.
Yes.
So, and that's one of the things that we do at Renaissance Academy Charter School of the Arts. We are an arts integration school, so we integrate arts into what we're teaching, and we also have arts for art's sake. We recently got a grant through Young Audiences, and I also received a grant this year from National Association of Elementary School Principals in Crayola. And in those grants, we are going to have a symposium for other public charter district schools to come and see what we're doing. Recently received a grant from Daisy Marquis Jones, and part of that was a symposium to bring principals and people from other schools to come see how we do mindfulness at our school. So we are reaching out and trying to share those best practices. But again, we've only been around a year and a half, so,
sure.
So we're figuring out what's working.
And in that way, the whole Petri dish idea, I think that's the model that a lot of people had hoped for. I think when people read the Times article and they said, wait a second, if this is one of the most successful charters in New York and they are sending out students or finding ways to get rid of students who are not performing, you know, the public schools can't do that, right? So that's not fair. And if you're just joining us, what we're hearing from our panelists this hour is they agree that that's not fair and that's not happening in Rochester. But that would be a problem. I think we all can agree on
yes.
that, right?
Yes.
If charters are have an unfair advantage in that, then what's the point? Because I want the RCSD to benefit from good ideas. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to incorporate good ideas because I care about the whole district. We all agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. Maria, you want to jump in as well?
No, when it comes to what we were just discussing, I think the difference between the charter school and the city school district, and let's make it very clear, we have excellent teachers all across the district. But as a parent, what I do really appreciate is the fact that my child is treated as an individual, that their learning is taken individually. I have what they might call a genius, but my child cannot write. She's in fourth grade, she cannot write. From kindergarten, I had a problem with her behavior, and I didn't have any teacher telling me what to do. I didn't have any teacher pushing my child aside because they cannot handle it. And as a parent, there's a say that say it takes a village to raise a child. I need to use my village. I am a parent. I cannot expect the teacher to teach my child my values and my morals. I need to be an involved parent. So this is a system situation. Yes, charter school works because my child is treated as an individual, but it's also work because I'm a parent that care about my child, and I use my teacher, I use the staff, I use my pediatrician, I use all the resources that I have available. The difference between charter school and public school when it comes to testing, I can speak for my school. Last year, Samantha was in school for, I believe, 6 Saturdays. Teachers took time out of their personal time to come to school on a Saturday from 9 to 11 and review all the testing and get the kids' anxiety level down to a level that they can handle and perform well in their testing. My daughter has anxiety. My daughter is ADHD. Yes, she's highly intelligent, but the fact that she has somebody taking the time to show her what she says is going to expect in that test brought her anxiety to a level that she scored perfect in all her testing.
Let me get back to the phones, and John in Rochester has been waiting. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. You know, one of the big problems with education in this country are the big public teachers' unions and education unions, and I applaud the charter schools because they set a new precedent, really, in education, which is refreshing. And one of the reasons, and I'll ask the question I have for your panel is, one of the reasons these big newspapers and small newspapers print a lot of negative articles about charter schools is they're in the back pockets of the teachers' unions and align themselves with that belief. What are your thoughts on that point?
Thank you, John.
Okay.
And Maria, the parent, wants to jump in first. Go ahead,
no,
Maria.
No, because actually I wrote it down. That's another thing that is different from charter school and public school. Teachers in charter school don't have a union. They have a job by the performance of their children. So if your student don't perform, you get an evaluation, and the evaluation, your job depends on that evaluation. So there's no union to be the middleman between your administrator and your job. Your children perform, or you don't have a job.
Now, to be fair here, Maria, you're just opening all kinds of different tangents, and I'm going to have to come back on a different day here.
Notice that we didn't.
The administrators did not jump right in.
I would like to say something.
Go ahead, Donna, yeah.
However, you know, we do everything we can to support our staff every mm-hmm. step of the way. This is not a situation where, you know, we play gotcha with our staff. We are extremely supportive. We do mentoring. We do collegial circles. Our leadership team is in classrooms all the time. I'm in classrooms every day giving feedback. It is a very extremely supportive environment. At our school, they do not work an inordinate amount of hours. They get good benefits. They get a good salary. So, and our staff is happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Toya, go ahead.
And agreeing with both, you have to really work to coach teachers and give them the supports that they need. And so we put all those supports in place. We're constantly doing our walkthroughs to get feedback as to how we're doing as a school. We use that to really guide everything we do around professional development. So, and bring in any expertise if we need to reach out to someone to bring in supports for teachers, we do that. And I think because we have that type of an environment, and everybody knows that if you really work hard and we will provide the support, you will be okay. You know, you won't have to worry about the loss of a job, because you know that we're going to help you along. And if you're willing to come along with us and work with us to grow, we all have to grow.
And I got to say, I've been in the school for 5 years. We have the exact same teachers, the exact same staff, and these teachers are so dedicated. This is, and I'm not saying that they're not across the district, but it's just, you can tell the love for each child individually, the love that they have for their ability to learn, and they recognize that they don't learn the same way, and that's the way that I have to work with each child that I have in this classroom.
All right, well, Maria and John, our caller, have kind of pushed us in a direction that I think, to be fair, if we're going to talk any more about unions and unions or not unions, we will do that on a different day mm-hmm. with more parties represented there. But, yes. But John, thank you for the phone call. One more quick listener question. Jake writes to us and says, the New York Times article seems like an incident of classic institutional discrimination where, if taken at face value, there being no true ill intent on the part of the school, they did effectively end up discriminating inappropriately. Are there any true active accountability organizations involved in current charter schools, or is it all self-reporting? My question would really be, how prevalent is this really, and how would we even be able to ask that question if there is not active accountability?
We are held accountable by our chartering agency. There are two chartering agencies here in New York State. There's SUNY, State University of New York, and there's the New York State Department of Education. There are things that we do. We self-report. But there are also, they come and they do visits to the school. They do stakeholder meetings with teachers, parents, students, if appropriate, at an age level. The first 2 years of a charter, they come for a shorter amount of time. But at year 3, 4, and 5, they come for an extended period of time. We have to fill out an annual report with all sorts of data and all sorts of explanation of how we are how we're progressing towards our goal. Every charter school has a charter, which is a legal and binding document. In that charter, it spells out what your goals are, your academic goals, and we are held to them and need to show each year that we're making progress towards those goals.
Coming from working in the traditional public schools and now charter schools, I can say it seems as if we have more accountability in a charter school. We have to be reviewed every 5 years to be renewed, and that doesn't happen in the traditional schools. And so all the things that Donna Marie just laid out, those are all a part of the process. And we definitely have folks coming to check in on our data. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Scott, real quick, just writes to us, how many expulsions have there been at the schools represented?
I haven't had any expulsions.
None. And you've been there a year, right?
Yes.
Okay. None in a year?
None.
Zero?
Zero.
Zero expulsions.
And as long as I've been at the school, I have seen the exact same teachers.
All right. So no.
Yes.
None in that case. And then we only got a minute left here, and this is also a subject for a whole different hour. But Maria Del Mau is not only a parent, but a plaintiff in the Brown v. New York funding lawsuit. What's a brief update on that situation?
We just passed the first phase. They were trying to dismiss the case, and that we didn't have a case because of the way that charter school, the subject behind charter school and how they were funded. But the judge agreed that, yes, we have a case.
And your case is that charter schools aren't being funded enough, right?
Yes, that we don't receive the same amount per pupil that the district gets, and that we don't have funding for facilities. So charter schools are responsible to either lease a facility or purchase a facility, but they don't have it. Like, our facilities don't have physical education. They don't have gyms. They don't have cafeterias. So what we're looking is for the same funding as public school to get the same type of buildings that public schools get for their children.
Okay. Well, you keep us updated at least where that's going, no matter how it turns out there. We appreciate that. Maria Del Mao is a plaintiff in the Brown v. New York funding lawsuit, so that's something to keep an eye on. And I want to thank my guests. Maria, thank you for being here and telling us about your family, your children. Hope they're doing well, fourth grade, first grade. And also here, Toya Wilson, the principal from the Young Women's College Prep Charter School. Thank you, Toya. Nice having you here as well.
Thank you.
Donna Marie Cozine, the chief educational officer from Renaissance Academy Charter School of the Arts. Nice to have you as well, Donna.
Thank
Marie.
You.
And thanks for listening. Short break and a very different second hour. We're talking about what we really know or what we don't know about the differences among our faiths. And I'm not just talking about what it means to be Christian or Jewish or Muslim. I'm talking about within our faiths, and that's next.